Today's program has been brought to you by Cain Vineyard and Winery, a Napa Valley winery committed to respecting the soil and dedicated to the creation of three Cabernet blends. For more information, visit cain5.com.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Hey there, you're listening to Eat Your Words. This is Heritage Radio Network, and I'm your host, Kathy Irway. And did you know that Heritage is having a Hawaiian-themed barbecue this Saturday as a fundraiser? You should come on out, get tickets, and support Heritage Radio by having a lot of good fun. I'm having a lot of fun right now because I'm joined by two very exciting guests. And
three. Forgot Dr.
So we have, we're celebrating the catch. It's called Sea to Table Recipes, Stories, and Secrets by Ben Sargent with Peter Kaminsky. So Peter Kaminsky is here. How are you?
Hola, hola. I'm great.
It's like the third time, right?
Third time charmed.
All right. So we also have Ben Sargent, who is the author of that book.
How's it going?
Excellent. I'm a little confused right now. But we also have Dr. Claw in the house.
What's up?
So Dr. Claw is Ben's alter ego, where he wears a lot of lobster bling. And
yeah.
He is fully decked out right now.
No, I mean, pretty much how it got started was, Ben and I, we were roommates in Southie. And we moved up here to Brooklyn together. And my boy got, whatever. He started doing this stuff with Peter, PDK over here, getting wicked famous, hanging out with celebrities and whatever. And
getting shut down by the health department, whatever.
Well, yeah, I got shut down by the health department because my boy's like, yo, blowing up. And he leaves me to deal with the DEC, your health department, like freaking NYPD, fire department.
Ben, you screwed up.
That was the end of selling illegal lobster rolls out of my basement. But you've been to my basement.
It's pretty exciting, yeah. It's surfboards lining the whole place.
Yeah, KDE, what's up?
So, I don't know who to talk to right now. You or Dr. Claw, but so the catch, this is really an exciting collaboration, I think, because Peter, you were the outdoor columnist for the New York Times for several years, and you wrote actually in Culinary Intelligence. I remember a really fun passage where you talked about catching a bunch of fish with your daughter Lucy, and then I think you brought them right to a restaurant and gave them to a chef.
I brought them to 21 Club.
Yeah.
They were blackfish.
Yes, that's
and,
right.
And showing up at 21 Club, you know.
Like with, a cooler
with,
full
with,
of them.
Yeah, with my little igloo with all these incredible Manhattan swells. It was fun.
So you're no stranger to fishing locally and cooking with it. And how did you meet Ben or Dr. Claw? Both,
well, there's
maybe?
There's this scene down on North 4th Street. There's a pier that sticks out into the East River. And it's just great. It only could happen in New York. There's, I call them the fishing poles, which are all the Polish guys, who hang out there. And then there's like the Dominican guys who deliver Chinese food. And a guy I call Desmond, but his real name is Denton.
And
he's got long dreads. Yeah. And a bunch of sort of,
oddball freaks?
Hipsters. Yeah. Hipsters.
Oh, okay. We were just fishing and Peter was, we didn't know who he was. I had no idea. It was just this guy in his glasses sitting patiently watching what was going on. And he came to one derby event after the next. So we just kept seeing this guy appearing. We had no idea who he was. And finally, my friend Jamie started talking to him. And, next thing I know, he's friends. He's hanging out with us. And I guess that's
he's written a ton of cookbooks.
Yep,
Pig Perfect. A million. Grilling the Argentine Way, Seven Fires with Francis Melman, and many more. And also Bacon Nation. That's the latest one of
yours. Get it now.
Yep.
Check it out. It's a whole nation of bacon in a book.
By the way, I cooked out of that last night.
What'd you make?
I made the tagliatelle. No, it was the fettuccine with, oh, it was so good, with bacon, obviously.
Good,
and kale.
Good.
And it was incredible.
Yeah, that one. Yeah.
I made so much of it, and I was like kind of expecting people to come over, and nobody came over, so I actually ate the whole thing myself.
I've done that.
But that's
before.
A great recipe.
Yeah. No, they're really cool because it's not like, you know, overloading stuff with bacon and cheese because it's crummy stuff. It's mm-hmm. using bacon for the noble ingredient that it is.
Right.
So I'm fascinated that you two crossed paths while fishing in the city. And how did you... So, Ben, you've been on this cooking channel show, mm-hmm. Catch It, Cook It, Eat It.
Yep.
And you're a big star now. You're on Celebrity, you know, well, Food Network. I don't know.
I had a really good run there for a while. I don't know. Now I'm sort of back to the basics.
Back to Dr. Claw. Okay.
I think so. I mean, back to, yeah, my roots maybe. But it was definitely a blast. And yeah, I got to travel all over and fish mm-hmm. and cook essentially what we caught the whole way through.
And you've been, like, since day one, you know, you opened a bar called Hurricane Hopeful.
Right.
You've been sort of known as the Brooklyn Chowder Surfer. Mm-hmm. guy. And, you know, this book seems to me like a culmination of all these adventures and all the sort of dogma you've been teaching about really good seafood, fresh and cooked in a very American style.
Yeah. I would say, I guess my upbringing is New England. But I think I am. Is that my phone?
It's Dr. Claw's phone.
Yo, what's up? Sorry. What's up? That's. Hold up, yo.
Sorry.
Hold up.
So you're from Boston.
Originally born and raised in Boston. I moved to New York and I was sort of, felt like I was frustrated because my days by the sea were coming to a close. And then somehow discovered fishing and surfing and all things that I used to do in Cape Cod, right smack here. Actually closer than what you can find in Cape Cod,
yeah.
I would say.
Like down your block or something.
Yeah, because Boston really doesn't have, even though it has the harbor, it really doesn't have accessible beaches with waves as close as we do. And so suddenly I just had this idea to put my grandfather's chowders and some surfboards together. And it was sort of just a garage for friends to come and hang out. And I couldn't sell enough surfboards. That's really why the chowder thing happened.
And in your book, you mention very briefly, you know, the fish that I catch here, no, it doesn't have four eyes or something. And you can eat it. Peter
agrees with me on this one, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, in 25 years of writing about this in the New York Times, first question everyone asks is, do you eat it?
Right.
Sometimes I do, sometimes I don't, but you can eat it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It is clean water here. The East River here is flushed out by four tides a day, four or eight. It's from the Sound and from the ocean. The only problem really with our fish is striped bass that are born in the Hudson. When they're little babies, they live way upstream in Troy, and that's where General Electric used to dump PCBs. So they get that in their fat. But otherwise, you know, they're clean. The bluefish are clean. The weakfish are clean.
Flounder, those things.
Are clean.
Tilefish.
Clean.
That's
awesome. I would say, too, wouldn't you say, like, at least with striped bass and bluefish, it's a migrating fish. So it's coming in here to do its thing, but then it's gone.
Well, no, stripers, when they're a little nursery, when they're babies, is upriver. But basically, they're in and they're out.
Right. So what I'm saying is if you get, you know, beautiful fish in Montauk, it very well could be the same fish, and probably is the same fish.
Yep.
Yeah.
Cool. And it's very different, too, because a lot of the fish that you'll see on the beds of ice in stores are, like, farmed tilapia, farmed salmon, farmed everything.
Right.
And that's grown in who knows, you know, like, the conditions can vary, and we've heard the horror stories. So.
In a fish concentration camp.
Totally.
That's not, yeah, it's not a pretty thought. So, yeah, I mean, food for thought. There we go. So how did you guys come together to work on the book? Did you, because you got the book deal.
Yeah, Peter and I started talking. I was really nervous about doing this because I've never done anything like it.
A cookbook?
And Clarkson Potter said, we need, I don't even remember what it was, 100 and something recipes. And I was like, this is impossible. You know, I don't think I have 100 and something recipes in Mars. I don't even have close to that. So I'm freaking out. So I went to Peter for help and advice. Mm-hmm. And he was just sort of coaching me through the whole process. Right. And I don't know. At a certain point, you just, I don't know. I mustered up the courage to ask him to do it, and he said yes.
Which mustered up the courage.
He probably
to say yes.
Regrets hugely. It was a beast. Was it not a beast, Peter?
Yeah, well, you know, childbirth is always tough. I'm told.
Well, you did an excellent job, and there are 100 and some recipes here.
Well, I have the advantage of, obviously, the show, and so I did a lot of traveling, and there are some recipes in there, like the halibut from Alaska, which it is one of the recipes I encountered on the road, which, you know, I was so blown away by. And mm-hmm. I'm not going to say they were all amazing, but there were a few that were so good that I had to ask the person if I could just put it in there.
Hey, Ben, was the halibut the one where you went out with the family and the little kid?
Yeah.
Tell that story.
It was cool. We were in Sitka, Alaska, and our plane had almost crashed when we came in.
Ooh.
We almost missed the runway. But by the second day, we were out fishing, and this family, mom, dad, and this 5.5, 6-year-old kid are out there, and the producer at the time actually tried to get the kid off the boat because it was such a small skiff. He was afraid we weren't going to have enough room to shoot with this little kid in, and his father got really pissed off, and he actually got right up in the face of the producer, and he was like, "Oh, my kid runs this boat." And Jonathan looked at me like, yeah, right. And I swear to God, that kid ran the boat. It was awesome. He could do every... The only thing he couldn't do was pull in some of the fish because they were actually bigger than he was. But besides that...
Born Fisher. So this recipe for the halibut, is it the blueberry summer halibut with harissa sauce and oyster mushrooms, which sounds so good? Or the halibut chiappini?
No, it was the first one. And we made it with huckleberries because obviously huckleberries grow all over the island there. But this one I changed a little and added the blueberries just because I figured more people were going to be able to get blueberries.
Ah, it looks delightful.
It's amazing.
I like that. Sour, sweet and savory.
Yeah.
Let's cut to a quick little musical interlude and we'll be right back talking more about The Catch.
The Catch.
You're listening to Crying Blues by the California Honey Drops on the heritageradionetwork.org.
This is Chris Howell from Cane Vineyard and Winery, calling in from Spring Mountain above the Napa Valley. In our industrial world, most wines have become brands, but the wines I love are so much more. Fine wine is a civilizing substance that connects us to nature. It cannot be stamped out in a factory. If you're listening to this great show, you probably eat different. I urge you to drink different too. Go deeper. Cane5.com.
We're back chatting with Ben Sargent, Dr. Claw, and Peter Kaminsky.
So what's up?
So I hate to talk about less fun topics, but, you know, talking about seafood, we all think about sustainability. At least I do. Or any food, actually. So how do we monitor that situation? Because the facts are always changing, it seems. I mean, it's constantly evolving. There's different seasons that different fish are abundant. And... you know, I go to Seafood Watch or something like that. how do you guys, do you just like have so much knowledge that you are aware of what's good when?
Yeah, I mean, you know, where I'm from, to be honest with you, there ain't really no problem with the fish. You know, there are plenty of fish. I go to Red Lobster all the time, and I can tell you the fish is good. The mad quantities of fish.
Of lobster?
Yeah, mad quantities of lobster, mad quantities of fish, except the lobster that I take out of the tank on occasion. But there's a lot of fish, and there ain't no problem whatsoever with, what do they say, overfishing or whatever?
Really, Dr.
No, I say, you know, eat them up. Eat them up while they're still around, because there might be a day when you can't get your hands on like all the fish anymore. So, so my opinion is eat the shit out of them. You know what I'm saying?
Carpe diem.
Yeah, I don't agree with that. Second stupidest thing I've ever heard.
I'm going to have to agree with Peter on that, Dr. Claude. That was really dumb.
So, I mean, the thing. Listen, it's hard. And there's these seafood cards. There's, you know, Monterey, and there's Blue Ocean,
right?
And there's Charleston's Aquarium. And they have these color-coded lists, and you go crazy trying to figure it out.
Yeah.
Here's the deal. If we all keep eating the big fish at the top of the food chain, they're gone. Our bluefin tuna have crashed about 90% in the last 15 years, 90%. These are large, magnificent game animals that come right by New York City. It's like if you had buffalo in New York City.
Right.
So, you know, the stripers have been managed pretty well. The state of Alaska, wild seafood from Alaska, those people do a great job.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
See, the problem with farm fish, even if it's raised right, is that if they're raised right, you're taking the little fish that those big fish eat out of the food system, and you're starving the wild fish.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not clear cut. On the other hand, if we all ate wild fish all the time, the oceans are, you know, they can't sustain this for about maybe 25, 30 years, then it's done.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, a great example is the orange roughy. No one ate orange roughy 30, 40 years ago. And then the sonar people tracking the long-range migration of tuna, which are so expensive, found these big pods of fish in the middle of the ocean. And with modern technology, they basically fished them out like in 10 years.
Right.
So it's hard to have a right and a wrong. It's going to take a balance. We are going to need some farm fish, but if it's wild and it's, you know, sustainable, and your little seafood cart will tell you that in your area.
I also think, Peter, I mean, we both have firsthand experience of being young and you know, fishing to our heart's content. And in my case, it was in Pleasant Bay in Orleans, and my grandfather and I, we used to catch 40, 45 flounder every time we went out. And now there's no flounder left in Pleasant Bay. And
yes, this is one of the things that prompted Paul Greenberg, I think, to write Four Fish. It's like, where's all the fish now?
And sometimes you actually feel it, and you begin feeling guilty, and you're like, oh my God, maybe I actually had an impact. And in a small bay like that, you do. And you really do have to either let go the majority of your fish and just keep the one or two that you need.
Peter, fishing for decades, have you noticed a difference, decline?
Yes and no. I mean, I noticed, stripers were almost gone. But then the five states in the Northeast got together and made a pact.
Right.
And they put a moratorium on the fishing. And it's come back pretty well.
Good.
Now our problem is Japanese, the Russians, those big factory ships are catching a lot of the bait fish, the bunker, or menhaden, because they use it for fish meal.
And pills, too. I've heard that they use them for...
Yeah,
right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's like...
Yo, what's up, pills? What's up?
When one thing goes up and the other goes down and,
it's... Nature is complicated. She works really well, but you start messing around with her.
I love how this book is organized in sections by the type of fish, because you see a lot of recipes that are like, oh, you know, just any white-fleshed fish will do. And that's true, you know, for a lot of recipes, but you specifically introduce each fish, blackfish, bluefish, so forth, whitefish, catfish, and their different strengths and what's also where you catch them, where they're from.
Sure. I think, Peter, we talked about this a lot, and it made sense to keep it pretty local. I mean, we do, it is sort of all fish within the United States. Even if we're going as far as Puerto Rico or Hawaii, we really tried to capture, you know, just what we can eat around here. And in the case of something like a blackfish, that's as local as it gets. And you don't see them a lot on the menu because it's not a commercial fish. But I think we both felt like it was important.
Yeah,
to...
it's a delicious fish.
Yeah.
I say it looks like a mahi that's been mugged and left in the gutter.
Right. In the book, there's actually a story about Denton catching catching a fish. But you remember we had to change it to muskrat?
Yeah.
So Denton fishes with this. Well, he goes out.
Okay.
He caught a blackfish.
Mm-hmm.
As he was reeling the blackfish in over the rocks, sort of lifting his rod, a hairy, furry, we won't say what, it was a rat.
It was a rat.
Jumped and grabbed his fish, literally, off the line and took it down into the rocks.
And gave him the finger.
And gave him the finger. And the funny thing is that Denton he'll still fish that spot, but he now has like a 12-foot pole that he uses so that he doesn't have to be anywhere near the rocks where that rat was hiding. So he fishes from the parking lot.
Dr. Claw, what would you do if you were there in that situation?
Yo, what's up? I gotta say, I mad respect to Denton. I know him. He fishes real hard out on the piers. I got a problem with rats. I think they're mad nasty. And I'll say this: Boston's got the rat problem under control, but you guys up here in New York City, you gotta control the rats. They are taking over.
This is I never would have thought about that.
I think that's probably true, but, you know.
Yeah.
Boston's sort of a sort of uptight kind of...
So what is your favorite latest a fish right now in season locally to cook with?
Peter, what do you think?
Stripers.
Yeah.
Stripers?
Yeah, stripers
and blues.
You've
been catching them? Yeah?
Yeah.
Cool.
It's the time. The time. Now blues are coming in. And blues have a bad rap. People say they don't like them.
Bluefish?
Because they're too fishy.
I like them.
Well, the deal is bluefish have oil in them.
Mm-hmm.
And when any fish with oil in it is exposed to air, you know, the oil starts to get rancid. But fresh caught bluefish is as fresh tasting as striper, as flounder, as anything else.
Yeah, and they take on marinades really well with all that oil.
Yes, they do. Yes, they do.
Yeah, it really soaks in there. Ben?
I love bluefish, and Peter and I talk about this in the book. I think that is the major problem is two things, is the oil, the air, and then the fact that you can solve a lot of this problem just by bleeding the fish right when you catch it. And that's sort of new. A lot of people do it with many different species
of
fish.
So you can solve
now.
The problem of it getting bad early?
Yeah, just get that blood out of there as fast as you can. You pull the gills, and in certain fish, you do it differently. You might cut an incision at the tail and crack it.
Mm-hmm.
Right when you sever its spinal column, the blood just pours out. It sounds gross, but it does a lot for the meat.
That's good to know.
Yeah.
So if you're not catching fish, how would you guys what would you guys look for in a seafood monger? What kind of places? How do you ensure that the quality is good?
Go ahead.
Well, here's one thing. The great American fishing writer of the 20th century, A.J. McLean, Al McLean, said, when you touch fresh fish and smell your hands, they should smell like cucumbers.
Oh.
Not like fish.
Yeah, not like fish.
I know what you mean, though. That like kind of fresh, clean, almost sea-like.
Totally.
Yeah.
And when you go in and, you know, the fish needs to, you know, when you see it in a case and it's kind of like dry on top.
Yeah.
That's...
like a filleted piece?
Yeah. It's just... man, I don't have words for it. I don't have legal words for it. It's just... you get to know your guys. Now,
Know your fishmonger.
Mm-hmm.
And we're lucky.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In the Northeast, you're probably lucky on the coasts, you're lucky because farmers markets have happened big time.
Right.
And there's always someone selling fish. And what they're selling is usually the best stuff.
Very good.
The freshest you can find.
Yeah.
I would also say... you know, there's all these websites that are popping up, and they're really, they're the real deal. And the whole idea, like, you know Sean from Sea to Table.
Mm-hmm.
The whole idea is to sort of knock out the middleman.
Yeah.
So your fish is not sitting and getting stinky in a market where you have no control over it. His whole thing is put your fisherman directly in touch with the buyer.
Mm-hmm.
And that's it. And the way that packing materials are now, they're so good that if that fisherman learns how to pack it, and you're willing to pay the $2 or $3 more per pound because you know it came directly out of his boat,
mm-hmm.
you're getting the best you can get.
So cutting out the distributor not only helps the fishermen
hugely
have, you know, a better deal,
prices.
But freshness. But,
you know, I want to say it because I'm a real supporter of it as the Whole Foods and Fairways of the world, which have good stuff, start taking over everywhere. New York City is still blessed with little butcher shops
right.
and little fish stores, yeah. and those guys have been in it, and their parents have been in it, and you get to know them, and you will find good stuff there.
Speaking of that, what do you think of like the new age butcher? Like, if I dare say, the hipster butcher. We've got hipster fishmongers popping up too now.
We do.
Well, I'll tell you, I'm for it.
Okay.
I mean, when I first moved to Brooklyn, right after the Revolutionary War, you know, there was the old ethnic stuff, the red sauce Italian, the old Jewish restaurant, and they were getting kind of tired.
Mm.
But I still loved that Brooklyn had that stuff. Mm-hmm. And now that, you know, the hipster, artisanal, whatever, came in, yeah, it's kind of a uniform and kind of a style. It's easy to make fun of. But there are people out there doing great pastrami and mm-hmm. great pickles right. and great fish and great pizza. And, you know, we're damn near ground zero for, like, great food in America. I mean, they write about us in Paris now.
Yeah.
So, yeah, everyone's got a chin patch and a flannel shirt. And, okay, make fun of it. But, man, they're doing good food.
And also some of them, I think, interned with the real deal. So they've been passed down the torch, and call them the real deal or not, they still learn from the masters.
Oh, you got to for something like...
Exactly.
You know.
Totally.
I'm curious, though, about the hipster seafood markets. I'll keep an eye out for those.
Greenpoint.
Are you going to open one?
Greenpoint.
Or is Dr. Claw?
No. I think Dr. Claw, would you ever open a fishmonger? No, that's not my thing. What I'm saying is I don't have time for that anymore because, for one thing, I'm chasing Mad Tail. For the other, it's just, you know, it's a big responsibility, and I got my hands tied with the police department and all kinds of trouble I'm in. So, I would leave that for my boy B. You know, he's kind of taking things in a different direction from me, and that's cool. That's mad cool. But, you know, more power to him.
So B, what is next for you? What's your next direction?
Well, I don't think, I mean, Dr. Claw's not being entirely fair, but I don't know. I mean, some of this stuff happened sort of by accident, you know? I don't know how the Cooking Channel thing happened. I really don't. And I would say I probably don't have the business skills or organization to take on a fishmonger.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Not only that, but people don't understand. Fish is frozen, mm-hmm. and it's all frozen. It's illegal. Even in the best sushi you have has been flash frozen out on the water at one point. It's a really tough industry. When you cut into a fish, your hands are so cold, freezing cold. You're standing on concrete all day, so your knees start to give out by 5 at night. You've been there since 4 in the morning. All the fish stuff happens, you know, what, from 1 a.m. to whenever. It's a very, very hard industry.
Yeah,
and it used to all be run by the mafia. I had a experience where I special ordered some lobster, and I got a better price for it, and from a different wholesaler.
Mm-hmm.
And I was getting into my car. This was back in like 2001 in Williamsburg. And I was getting into my old shitty little car, and I heard a voice in the behind me. And the guy goes, "I suggest you talk to Tony about the fish." And I did not even turn around. I just nodded because I knew obviously exactly what he was talking about. And I went and I picked up that lobster so fast. It was terrifying. So I don't know if it's still a mafia run, but you walk up to the Fulton Fish Market in Hunts Point.
Uh-huh.
Oh, it's scary. It's
a
terrifying.
Pretty different industry
yeah.
to get into.
Yeah.
Well, the book is great. Mm. I can't wait to cook out of it.
Thank you.
It actually comes out tomorrow. So if you're around Brooklyn, they're going to have a launch party at Powerhouse Bookstore in Dumbo. You should definitely come check it out.
Peter will be there answering all the questions.
Any other books out now, Kathy?
And Bacon.
Bacon
are you gonna have
Nation.
A Bacon, yeah. What's next for Bacon Nation? Can we see you do a... reading?
Are you bringing
books? Well, I've been doing them all along.
That's true.
I'm going down to this big thing in Atlanta over Labor Day and then a tour through the South. And my co-author, Marie Rama, has, God bless her, just been on the road everywhere cooking and being on TV. So
can we check out baconnation.com or is it just go to your website, Peter Kaminsky.
No, no. Go to Amazon.
Go to Amazon.
Can you... Wait,
bring the book. Wait. Buy it at your local independent bookseller. We support them.
True.
But if you can't find it, go to Amazon.
And The Catch is out from Clarkson Potter tomorrow, so definitely don't... Just catch that. That
just
was really
that.
Bad. thank you so much.
Day job. Keep the day job.
All right. Thank you so much, Dr. Claw, Ben,
Yo,
and
what's
Peter.
Up?
We love
what's
you,
up?
Kathy.
Katie
Thank
E,
so
what's
much.
Up? What's up?
All right, let's go eat pizza. See ya.
Ooh, I like the way you do.
Whoa. Thanks for listening to this program on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website, or as podcasts in the iTunes Store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.